This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by Wheel Science. If you're looking for world-class carbon wheels that are UCI approved, come with a lifetime warranty and shipped free worldwide, then check out Wheel Science. Get all the performance at half the price, and when you use the coupon code KONAEDGE at checkout, you'll get an extra 10% discount. To learn more, head over to thekonaedge.com/wheels to find out more, or click on the link in your podcast player now. That's thekonaedge.com/wheels.
This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the world championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown, and it's great to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us on this edition. We head to the United States, to Denver in Colorado now, to catch up with Kelly Hua. Kelly, welcome onto the podcast. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Brad. Thank you very much for having me.
Kelly, that's not an American accent. Before we get started, it sounds quite English, a bit Aussie. Tell me a little bit about your backstory. Where are you from?
I am Australian. I was born in Australia, grew up in Sydney, lived in Western Australia. I've lived in Melbourne. My husband and I, since we've been married, we've lived in Canada, Germany, the US, England, and Perth. Yeah, so we've moved around a fair bit.
Where would you consider home?
Messed up.
Where would you consider home, Kelly?
Right now home is here, in Denver, Colorado. If my mum's listening to this, then the answer is, of course, Australia.
I love that. How long have you been in Denver now?
We moved here, 14, 15 months ago.
Okay.
But 7 years in the US altogether.
I mean, Denver and Colorado specifically, there's quite a big triathlon community, and not just triathlon, but I think endurance sport as well, particularly if you go towards Boulder, but a great place to live and train.
Oh, absolutely. I really feel like the altitude here just makes a huge difference. Not just the altitude, but the environment, the people that you kind of pass when you're going out on your Sunday ride will just blow your mind. It's fantastic.
I've heard some stories about the quality of athletes too. You talk about the people who you pass. Often it's the people who pass you that are mind blowing.
Yeah. There's just a huge community here. It's amazing. I haven't experienced that in any other city that I've lived in.
Kelly, how did you get into the sport of triathlon? Where did it all start for you?
When we moved to the US, the year I turned 40, so that was 2012, and the plan was that we were coming to the US for 2 years for my husband's job, and I come from a background in public health, so I was working as a program manager for a government funded public health program in Melbourne, and that was just not. I just didn't want to go into that field when we lived in the US. And so, I was sitting on the couch, reading books and doing a bit of running every now and then when we first moved to the US. My husband was a cyclist, and I have a background as a swimmer in high school, and I did a bit of running, and it was really his idea. You know, he suggested that I, maybe I should ride a bike. And then another friend said, maybe I should do a triathlon. And so yeah, I signed up for a 70.3 and then thought, well gosh, I really should probably figure out how to do this. That was in 2013,
which wasn't that long ago, and you've gone full on into it.
Yeah, the first race that I did was Augusta 70.3 in 2013. And I had no idea what to expect. I had no idea how it was going to play out on the day. And my husband was on the run course and he shouted out to me that I was coming fifth, I think. And I nearly fell over. I was like, what? it was, I kind of just thought, well, I really should keep going and maybe do a bit of serious training and see what happens.
We all sort of remember our first triathlon. I remember mine. There's an infamous photo doing the rounds. I've tried to hide it as best I can with me with my helmet on backwards in transition. But we all have stories like that. How was that first one as an experience for you?
So I can't remember what my transition times were, but you know, as I'm trying to put my cycling gloves on, I was like looking around thinking, why aren't these people putting gloves on? I couldn't understand. But, I got through the swim fine. I got through the bike. I went a little faster than I was expecting to do on the day. And then I got out on that run course. And it just kept going and going and going. And I remember thinking, when is this going to end? This is the longest thing I've ever done. That was just over a 5-hour race. And I just remember thinking, okay, I'm done. Had enough of this.
It obviously wasn't enough because you've gone back for more.
Yes. So I qualified for Worlds at that race, luckily. And so I thought, you know, gosh, you know, I have to take this slot. And so then I really think that that's what did it. I'm not sure, you know, if I hadn't done that, I'm not sure what the pathway would have been. But because I took that slot, that was for, Mont Tremblant, in 2014, it just sort of kicked it off. I think it really kind of started. I didn't want to make an idiot of myself, you know, at my next race. So, yeah, I thought I'd better do some training.
Did you know that could have been a possibility going into that first race, that you could do well enough to qualify and claim a spot at Worlds?
I remember that this was back in the day when they used to post the athlete guide to us, and on the very last page there was some mention of 70.3 World Championships and you know, these slots that they kept talking about, and I read that, and I do remember having this little moment thinking, wow, I wonder if I'm in the running for that. And I remember feeling a little, kind of enthused by the idea that that was a possibility, or that was available. Yeah. I really didn't know, before I started. Cause I was just a recreational runner, hadn't done much cycling, swam when I was in high school and then gave up swimming and didn't swim for 20 years. So really wasn't sure what that was going to look like on a race course. So
that's incredible. You mentioned swimming growing up and running a little bit. Did you swim at any competitive level? I mean, where did this sort of competitiveness in you come from?
Yeah. So my uncle ran a swim school in Sydney. And I was really lucky. So, you know, when I was very young, I, you know, went through his swim school and learnt to swim. And then when I started high school, he offered me the opportunity to come and train with his squad every day. And so I swam competitively. I did okay. You know, right up until the end of high school. And in Australia, we don't do college sports or anything like that. So, you know, pretty much unless you're going to be an Olympian, most people will quit after that. And I'd had enough, you know, swimming 5 days a week, you know, for several months a year, I was done. But what I did have under my belt by that stage was just, you know, technique. And I've been saying for a long, long time, you know, swimming is, it's technique more than anything. And so, you know, you can be the fittest girl in the world and, be a terrible swimmer. And it doesn't matter how much fitness you gain, you know, unless you have a good stroke, it's not going to help you. So, I think I was lucky. That being said, I don't swim as fast as I used to. And take it a little bit for granted. I have done. So my biggest gain has really been on the bike. Okay. That's, you know, I had no experience on the bike, before I started triathlon. So.
And the running side of things, were you just a recreational runner? Nothing serious there? What sort of stuff did you do?
Again, in high school, I ran cross country, you know, represented, Sort of like two levels up, so school zone and then regionals from third grade, so from like a 8 year old through till I was in high school. So and that was with very very little training. I had a little bit of that, and I ran recreational, never really raced anything. I did a marathon when I the year I turned 30, I think, and that was as much as I'd done, really. So.
And you mentioned having that break from the swimming. Obviously, you were keeping fairly active, but also in that time you had two children as well. Was it difficult to come back to a sport that was as structured as triathlon? Was it something you struggled with?
No, I didn't start triathlon until the kids were a little bit older. And so I think I'm lucky, my kids are 15 and 13 now. And so really they're able to look after themselves. I don't need to, make them breakfast. And, there's a whole lot of stuff that they're quite independent with now. So, I got back. I was racing all week last week down in New Mexico, and got back from a really long drive last night, and my 15-year-old son was cooking dinner. So that's not the experience that younger triathletes have, when their kids are a fair bit younger and they struggle with, having to, do school pickups and drop-offs and all this other stuff. My kids are at the age where, I've got a little bit more freedom. So
can I send my kids to yours for training?
Absolutely. Yes.
Sounds like you got a sweet deal there, Kelly.
I know, right? That was so delightful last night, coming home to cook dinner. It was great.
Yeah, I'm actually quite worried if my teenager cooks, because I'm not sure if we want to eat it, to be honest.
Oh dear.
Kelly, when did Kona first pop onto your radar?
I was used to think, for the first few years of doing triathlons, I would hear these stories about the amount of training that was required to do a full Ironman, and people would say, oh, so you're doing really well at 70.3, when are you going to do a full? And I would just laugh and say, no, I have no desire to do that. That's just for crazy people. And then it just became bigger and bigger to me. I was doing really well in 70.3, and I could do a race and then not be so beaten up and wrecked the next day. And as my fitness built, it became more of a reality. And so I signed up. I did Arizona in 2016, I think it was. And, but I had done that year and the year before, I'd done, I had sort of built up my running. I was getting way more confident with the biking. I had done Boston that year and, maybe Chicago Marathon the year before. And so I had a fair bit of the endurance, like all the pieces were coming together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just became more obvious that, hey, this isn't quite such a ridiculous thing after all. So, and that first Ironman that I did in Arizona, I'd be a liar if I didn't tell you that I really wanted to get a slot there. I spent so much time just crunching numbers, stalking the start list, and just, really, really hoping that that was going to be, that I could get a Kona slot in my first go. And of course I was served a hard lesson that day. So I deserved it. I deserved that lesson. The swim went well, the bike went well, and then the wheels fell off halfway through the run when I, just spent way too much time in the portaloo. It was the nutrition piece that I think messed me up. So.
And how do you bounce back from something like that? Going into it, I don't want to say fairly confident, but you must have had some sense of confidence, thinking, I can do this, and I'm here to grab a slot at Kona. When things don't go according to plan, how do you bounce back from that personally?
It's time. And I very distinctly remember as I crossed the finish line at Arizona with, what I should say was actually a very respectable time. It wasn't a disaster. It was, You know, I really should have been quite proud, but on the day I was quite bitter. And I remember crossing the finish line and I said to my friends, I never need to do that again, because it was such a sufferfest, that run. And then after a few days, probably within 2 weeks, I think I'd signed up for Texas. Because I just thought, I just really have to get this right. That was what it came down to. I just have to get this right. And I know I've got some places that I can improve. And, I was really dumb and arrogant to think that, you know, that I could nail this on the first go. So, it was time. I kind of liken it to childbirth. You know, you think, why would I do that again? And somehow you end up back there. So.
I was just thinking endurance athletes have got incredibly short memories. That's for sure.
That, right? Like a goldfish. Like, you know, you cross the finish line. If someone could record, you know, the things that I've said and thought as I've crossed the finish line, or, you know, at 40 kilometers into the run of an Ironman run, you know, you'd never do it again.
Yeah. So all bets are off within 24 hours after an Ironman. Anything that's said in that window counts for nothing. You can't believe a word. You can't believe a word of it.
Exactly.
And then going back and eventually qualifying, I mean, what did you do differently? Was there anything you did differently? You mentioned the nutrition piece. Obviously, you sorted that out and worked better next time around. But was there anything major that you changed?
I was just so much more relaxed going into the second one in Texas. I wasn't putting as much pressure on myself. I do remember that. And I sorted out the nutrition, and I just had the whole day just seemed to flow a little better, I think. You know, I wasn't holding anxiety and stress in my body that day. I was just, okay, let's see how we go. And I had no one there. I didn't have anyone there kind of tell me where I was at on the run course, nothing. I had no idea where I was at until, you know, I got my phone at the end and turned my phone on to see the results. And so really I was racing myself. I was looking at my watch and just thinking, okay, this is the time that I want to try and nail on this run. And it was, I think that made a huge difference. I wasn't worried about other people so much that day.
Has that experience changed the way you race?
Yes and no. Yes and no. Well, yes. I mean, you know, you really do. It comes down to yourself. And I've said to people, you know, someone said to me on the race course in Arizona, you know, second place or third place is 2 minutes ahead of you. And I remember thinking it wouldn't matter if there was a tiger chasing me right now. I have nothing. I'm doing what I can. I just have to do my own race. I can't be affected by other people right now. I think you really just have to race your own race.
And as far as the experience of Kona, I mean, you mentioned the first world champs that you qualified for was the 70.3 at Mont Tremblant. And Kona, I mean, the 70.3 worlds obviously moves around, but there's something special. There's an attraction about Kona. For you, what is it?
Racing the fastest people in the world, and putting myself in a position, putting myself at that place where, you know, I'm going to have to really bring my A game. That's what it is. It's the racing, the environment itself, you know, that town, it's growing on me. The first time I went there, I thought, oh no, it's small, it's crowded. I felt very claustrophobic. But the second time I went back, I think I kind of had learned a few little tricks of the trade and I did a little bit more touring around the island as well. And it's a special place. The environment itself can, you know, really sort out the men from the boys as well. so you know, it's a challenging course. There's challenging people, and the environment itself is, you know, it's hot and windy, and yeah, you won't get a harder race.
Absolutely. Kelly, you had I don't want to say a pretty decent race on the Big Island. You've picked up a podium, which you must be pretty stoked with. But do you feel like you've had the perfect race in Kona?
I haven't had the perfect race. I'm still chasing that. I still feel like I've got a better run in me. You know, I feel like I really feel like I can take some time off my run. So that's, yeah, I know that we were lucky last year with the wind and it wasn't quite as hot as the year before. So it's not the overall time that I'm chasing down, although, you know, that's always on my mind, but I really feel like I can put together a better run than I have. So, you know, I'd really like to try and, fix that in the next couple of years.
So I take it the plan is to go back.
Yeah, I'm doing Boulder this year. So in 5 weeks' time, I'm doing Boulder. And to be honest, at the end of last year, after Kona last year, I thought, okay, you know what? That was a big year. You know, it takes a lot of time, and it just sort of wipes out the rest of your life for so long. I thought I'd give it a break, and but then I changed my mind, and my husband convinced me, actually. He was like, you know what? We live at altitude. This is just such a, you know, you really have to take advantage of what this environment here in Denver is giving you. And so, you know, it sucks to train here. It's, you know, it's really tough, but, yeah, it's for my fitness, I feel like it's been a huge advantage, most definitely.
Brilliant.
I've got my fingers crossed. Last year at Boulder, I did really well. But you know, you never know who's going to turn up on the day. And you have to do your own race and execute as well as you possibly can, and hopefully better than the other girls that turn up. So, yeah. But I've been racing bikes. I've had a different build this year, than I had last year. I've just come back from, racing in New Mexico at the Tour of the Gila. So that's, I didn't run or swim for an entire week. I was just racing bikes. And, so we'll see. I'm not sure what this lack of run fitness is going to do to my performance in Boulder. We'll see.
Yeah, I guess only time will tell. In your career, I mean, you haven't been around the sport that long, but what are you most proud of?
Oh, goodness. Consistency. I seem to be able to, pull together, you know, good performances on the day. Not always PRs, but it's the consistency of my results that, you know, is it a testament to my, grittiness? 'Cause there's certainly been some really tough races. But yeah, when I look back, there's no DNFs, there's no big blow ups. It's all, it's a really consistent, performances.
What do you put that consistency down to? I mean, you mentioned your tenacity, but what else is it? Is it just solid training and putting in the hard work and the hours?
Yeah, I do that. And you know, that ebbs and flows as well. I definitely have a bit of a killer attitude on the day. It's funny. I'll be standing at the start line, or, you know, that kind of hour before the start line, and just, you know, you're just thinking, oh, I'm about to go through, you know, 10 hours of real suck. And so, you know, and I question, you know, I'm questioning my fitness. I'm questioning everything about what I've done. And I'm like, oh, this is all just going to be hurting. And then somehow I can pull it together. I'm looking at the numbers on my watch. I'm very driven by that. And, I just seem to go to another place and pull it out, even if I'm not sure that I had that in me on the day. And I'm quite often surprised myself and think, wow, I did not think I could have pulled that off today. That thought goes through my mind quite often at the end of a race, actually, is, wow, I didn't think I had that in me today. And somehow, yeah, just go to a different place in your mind.
We talk about the mental side of it quite a bit here on the podcast, and particularly when you go 70.3 and beyond, a lot of it is mental. You've got to do the work. There's no hiding. You can't fudge. You've got to do the hard work. But in my mind, and I'm not one of those athletes, don't get me wrong, but I look at the really top athletes, and from an ability point of view, I think they've all got great ability. But I think what separates the good from the great athletes is what goes on in the 6 inches between their ears. Is there certain things that you do that you think strengthens your mental fortitude, or do you practice it? Is it something you focus on?
I have some strategies when I'm racing and training. So I break it down into small pieces. So on the swim, for example, my watch buzzes at me every 500 meters. On the bike, it buzzes at me every 5 kilometers, and on the run, it buzzes at me every kilometer. And so I'm always trying to maintain consistent splits. I'm always looking at that number. And, you know, if, say, for example, on the run, I'm dropping off the pace, I can see it quite quickly. Every 5 or so minutes, it's telling me, you know, okay, come on, pick it up. Just a couple of seconds faster, Kelly. Just a couple of seconds faster. You can hold this. So there's that. It's just break it down into small pieces. And keep fueling, right? You have to remember to eat and keep fuel. When I start to get a little fuzzy, I know it's time to eat something, and that really helps, actually. Just maintaining that, to maintain that level of intensity, you just really have to keep on top of the nutrition.
Kelly, how much of your success in the sport do you put down to pure hard work, genetics, being born to the right parents, and luck, being at a race where maybe the field's not as stacked as another one would be? Do you think luck plays a part, and then the other two is genetics and hard work? What do you reckon? Do you need a nice mix of all three, or is it purely hard work? I don't know.
I think it comes down to, well, yes, I think you've identified the three really important pieces. I definitely have the genetics, and that was evident right from when I was a little girl. You know, I could just run faster than most girls my age. And I took that and worked with it. So yes, I have something in me that's, you know, faster than the average girl. But then I took that ability, and I have worked hard with it. And so I think that's given me a huge advantage. And then as far as luck goes, oh, absolutely. I mean, goodness, like I say, you cannot control who's going to turn up on the day. You can't control what training they've done. You know, there's girls that are just so much faster. And, you know, when you look at the people who turned up at Kona last year, on any given day, any of those girls who were in the top 10, have thrashed me. And when you talk to them afterwards, it just wasn't their day, or, you know, the nutrition wasn't working for them, or, you know, something, they weren't feeling right on the run, or they had a terrible swim. And so it's luck, it's genetics, and it's consistent training, most definitely.
Well, what do you love about the sport of triathlon and the community in general?
I love being around people who are like-minded. I love being around people who can show me a better way to do something. And I love the, you know, I mentioned that, you know, I have kids, and I feel like, you know, being so active in sport that rubs off on my kids as well. And so I just love being around, like-minded people, I guess, and people who are active. And that's what I would like for my children. Not, they don't have to be, you know, crazy about it like I am, but, you know, just that sports is something that is a really big piece of your life. You know, my friends are like that as well. So yeah, my friends that I've made are runners and cyclists and, yeah, I have a lot of, it's recreational, I suppose. You know, it's nice to go for a ride with someone as opposed to, you know, going and sitting in a pub and drinking for 4 hours, maybe. It's just a different way of relaxing.
Yeah, I guess that's one way of looking at it. And then Kelly, let's talk about balance. And you mentioned after Kona, you thought maybe you need to have a bit of a break because it does take a lot out of you. And you're a wife, you're a mom, and I'm sure you've got interests outside of triathlon as well. How do you keep the balance in some sort of – is there such a thing as balance if you're training for a race like Kona?
Balance. Yeah.
Is that a sandwich? Is that a sandwich topping? I don't know.
Yeah. I recognize that it can take over, and I'm lucky. I have a really supportive husband and family. And he's a cyclist and he trains almost as much as I do. And so between us, you know, we don't always get to train together, but, you know, with my marriage, you know, we have the same coach, and you know, he will ride up, you know, like a 4 hour long ride on the weekend or whatever, and he'll write the same thing for my husband. And so, you know, I think helps a huge amount, is that, you know, that is something that my husband and I can do together, and we enjoy, you know, we get to spend time together, and yeah, so that I think helps to contribute to the balance. I think if it was something that I did that he didn't do, it would cause problems. Mm. But you know, we get to spend time together like that. And we talk the same language. You know, we understand each other's world a fair bit. I'm lucky. I work from home. I'm a triathlon coach these days, and so, you know, I immerse myself in that world, and so maybe I have no balance at all.
I'm starting to think that might be the only way to qualify for Kona is to be so out of whack that that's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you just don't have a life.
Yeah, exactly. So. I know it's temporary. I know that, you know, I won't always be able to train at this intensity and this level. And while I've got the time and the means, I will do it. That's because I love it. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Kelly, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time out. Thanks for your time on the Kona Edge today.
Oh, you're welcome, Brad. Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge, I want to invite you to check out the Coach Parry Training Club. The Coach Parry Training Club is the essential resource for anyone at any stage of their triathlon journey. Whether you're just starting out in the sport and training for your first sprint distance race, or if you've been around the block a few times and are looking to take your Ironman performance to the next level, then the Coach Parry Training Club can help you. Developed by double Olympic and Commonwealth Games triathlon coach Lindsay Parry and myself, the Coach Parry Training Club is the go-to online platform for your training needs. It's like having a coach in your pocket. Get 20% off when you join the Coach Parry Training Club by using the coupon code KONA at checkout. Head over to thekonaedge.com/coach or click on the link in your podcast player now. That's thekonaedge.com/coach.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.